You'll all have experienced it and perhaps seen it on the train perhaps, and somebody else is on the phone, and because you keep going under through tunnels and embankments and so on, that the signal keeps cutting out, and forever this person on the phone, or maybe it's you and you're getting frustrated. If it's the other person, you're getting frustrated because you wish they'd just hung up and wait till they get to the station, but they keep saying, "Are you there? Are you still there? Have you gone? Can you hear me?" And it seems like half the conversation is asking that question. Are you there? Are you still there? Can you hear me? And you know, we can often feel like that with God, that we're calling out to him, we're praying to him, we're crying to him, and yet this doubt comes into our mind, well, is anyone really there? There seems to have been silence on the other end for quite some time. And so we ask the question, are you there? It may be this evening that you come to church with doubts, that you come burdened with perhaps intellectual doubts. I just can't square my belief in God or a possible belief in God with this aspect of knowledge or my job or what I'm told. Equally, it might be emotional doubts. You might be thinking, well, actually, I'd like to think that there is a God there, but how can there be when there is this in the world, or when there is that in my life? In these couple of weeks, we're looking at just a short series on this topic of Emmanuel, this word that means God with us. And really trying to dig into and drill down into this wonderful truth that God is a God who is with his people. Last week, if you were here, we looked at the wonder of Emmanuel, just seeing how unexpected it is and what an incredible privilege it is that God would want to be with people like us. Well, if that's the general principle, tonight we're looking more at the solid proof. Rather than the concept, the theological concept of Emmanuel, well, tonight we're looking at the person of Emmanuel. We're moving rather from thinking about God as a God who is everywhere to thinking about God who is a God who is here, a God who is with you. With the birth of Jesus, as we've had read for us here in Matthew chapter 1, God with us takes on a whole new significance, doesn't it? A significance that I think Old Testament believers would have struggled to believe, that they wouldn't have thought it possible that God could come and be with them in such a beautiful, such a dramatic, such a personal way. And yet, for all the wonder of it, for all the unexpected glory of it, we've somehow managed to put a ribbon around it, put some fairy lights up, and call it Christmas. Which is why we're doing it a few weeks before Christmas, so we can think about this topic, hopefully without some of those wrappings that go around it. When we think about Jesus as Emmanuel, and we think about Jesus as God with us, what we're talking about is the incarnation. That's a word you may have heard, you may not. The incarnation is just the term we use for the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, the Word, coming from heaven to earth, taking on a human nature, being found in a human body in the person of Jesus. Athanasius, who was a church father, 4th century, he said this: "So many are the Savior's achievements that follow from his incarnation, that to try to number them is like gazing at the open sea and trying to count the waves." That's a great picture, isn't it? He's saying, if you really think about what it means that Jesus, that God came down to earth to be Emmanuel, to be God with us, and that is who the person of Jesus is. If you really begin to think about that, well, it's like looking at the sea and you're trying to count how many peaks there are, how many waves there are, how many ripples there are, and you soon get lost in the greatness and the vastness of it all. And so what we're hoping to do tonight is to at least look at some of those waves, to look at a little bit of that picture, as we think about the significance of Jesus as Emmanuel. And the first thing I want to say is that Jesus is Emmanuel because he's God. A very simple point. Jesus is Emmanuel because he's God. There are many surprises here in our reading. I wonder what you think is the biggest surprise in our reading. Mary surely would have been surprised when she found out she was pregnant. We don't have it here in Matthew. We know it from Luke's gospel, don't we, how she reacted. Joseph certainly had a surprise, both when he found that his fiancée was pregnant, and then perhaps even a greater surprise when the angel came and appeared to him. Twice, Matthew tells us that she is pregnant, she's with child from the Holy Spirit. You see it verse 18 and then again over in verse 20. This is a virgin who is pregnant because the Holy Spirit has made it that way. But you see, actually, I think the biggest surprise isn't the manner of the conception at all, but is rather the identity of the baby in her womb. The bigger surprise than a virgin being pregnant and the virgin birth is that she's giving birth to Emmanuel. Well, this is a shock. It's a shock to Joseph, to Mary. It's a shock to all who come to understand it for the first time, that this baby really could be God. And yet Matthew tells us it shouldn't really have taken us by surprise. It shouldn't really have taken the Jews by surprise, because this is simply the fulfillment of what Isaiah spoke about all those centuries ago. So we read in verse 22, "All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had spoken by the prophet. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel." Just turn back, keep your finger in Matthew, but turn back with me to where that comes from in Isaiah 7, page 690. Page 690, and again, familiar words from Christmas, perhaps less familiar in their context. The story, what's happening, is the nation of Israel is split into two. You've got the northern kingdom, Israel, and the southern kingdom, Judah, based at Jerusalem. And the northern kingdom, Israel, has formed an alliance with Syria against Judah. They're coming to attack Judah, and Isaiah is prophesying in Judah, in Jerusalem, saying, trust God. Trust God in the face of this renewed threat. Well, King Ahaz, king of Judah, he's not interested in trusting God. He'd rather buy himself some military backup. And he's trying to win over Assyria, the nation of Assyria, to come and make an alliance with him. Well, it's in this context that Isaiah says to him in chapter 7, verse 11, "Ask a sign of the Lord your God, let it be as deep as Sheol or as high as heaven." He's saying to Ahaz, look, you don't trust me. You're trying to trust in Assyria, but look, you need to trust me, and I will give you this incredible opportunity. You can ask anything. You can ask for a sign that is literally out of this world. Ask for anything. Verse 12, Ahaz says, "I will not ask. I will not put the Lord to the test." Now, it sounds like a pious answer, but in fact, it's not. In fact, it's an answer which really betrays his heart, his pride. Ahaz isn't interested in a sign from God because he's not interested in God. Instead, he's interested in sorting out things his own way. And so we read, "Is it too little for you to weary men that you weary my God also?" Isaiah, speaking for God, is exasperated with this king. And that's when we get these famous words, verse 14, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign." God is going to give a sign that he is the one you should look to, that he is the one in control, that he is the one who can be trusted. What is the sign? "Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel." think that's a sign that's meant to stop us in our tracks. This is a sign that is just so incredible that even as it was spoken, Ahaz, others hearing must have thought, well, they can't mean that literally. That can't literally be going to happen. That's got to be figurative. That's got to be symbolic. That's got to be spiritual. You may have heard people try to explain this away and talk about this word virgin here. It's not actually mean virgin. It just means a young woman. But of course, no, it's very clear that it is the word virgin. It does mean somebody who hasn't had sex. It's the virgin who will conceive. If it was just a young girl who was going to conceive, well, what sort of a sign would that be? People conceive all the time. Now, the Lord himself will give you a sign because the virgin will conceive. And when you see a baby in the womb of a virgin, well, that is Emmanuel. Later in Isaiah in chapter 9, again, words we have at Christmas that this child to be born, this king who's coming, is going to be the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Here is this child coming who's going to be Emmanuel. He's going to be God with us, but he's also going to be that mighty God. So we go back to Matthew 1 and we see that the shock there is not simply that a virgin has fallen pregnant and is going to give birth to a child, but this child, this son, is divine, veiled in flesh, the Godhead see. It's such an incredible truth that it's one that we become so familiar with, we're almost numb to. But there we see that Jesus is not a God. He's not almost God. He's not nearly God. He's not an angel. He is God. He is Emmanuel. He is God with us. So Jesus is Emmanuel because he is God. And you know, it follows that Jesus alone is Emmanuel. Jesus alone is Emmanuel. Some people are called Emmanuel, aren't they, today? And a child may be named Emmanuel as a prayer. May God be with us. As a statement of faith, we trust God is with us. But you see, only Jesus can be called Emmanuel as a descriptive, factual title. That he is God with us. No one else in the Bible could bear that title. Abraham wasn't God with us. Moses wasn't God with us. Joshua wasn't God with us. Gideon wasn't God with us. Elijah wasn't God with us. Isaiah wasn't God with us. Hezekiah wasn't God with us. Only Jesus, only this baby, there in the virgin's womb, has shoulders broad enough to bear the weight of that title. And this is so significant because it puts Jesus in the place that he needs to be, exalted above all others. You know, Muslims will say that Jesus is one of the prophets, and they will think that they are honoring him as one of the prophets. Now, many people today will claim that Jesus is a good man, a wise man, a teacher, and they think in so doing that they are honoring him, that they're giving him his due, they're giving him credit. And yet you see that if you put Jesus in the same breath as anyone else, not only is it patronizing, not only is it foolish, but it is deeply offensive. Because Jesus is the only one who is God with us. You may have heard this quote before from Prince Philip. He said this, "If you travel as much as we do, you appreciate how much more comfortable aircraft have become. Unless you travel in something called economy class, which sounds ghastly." The royal family don't travel economy class, do they? And whilst we sometimes wish, perhaps, that Prince Philip would choose his words more carefully, we don't expect him to travel economy class. We expect the royal family to have the comfortable seats and the closer attention from the air hostesses, whatever they get beyond that little curtain. I've never been. But it's the same with Jesus. You can't put Jesus in economy class. You can't put him in any class because Jesus is in a class of his own. So any time that people start putting him in the same breath, start putting him side by side with any other religious leader, any other philosopher, any other guru, what they are doing is they're trying to drag Jesus down to a human level. Or where Matthew says here, you can't do that because when the virgin conceives, that baby will be Emmanuel. That baby is different from all others because that baby is God with us. He alone is God with us. He's divine because of who he is. Not like the Buddha who works his way up to enlightenment by his meditation, by his work, by his efforts. No, he is divine in and of himself. And that is why he is the one who we listen to. He is the one we follow. He is the one we obey. He is the one who we should give our lives to. Jesus is Emmanuel because he's God. And Jesus is Emmanuel because he's with us. There's all the difference in the world, isn't there, between a letter and a visit. Think of somebody who you admire, a hero of yours. Let's say Alid Jones, I'm sure a hero to many. And you think, I've appreciated his work for so long, I'm finally going to write and tell him. You write to him, and you wait. You know, if you received a letter back from Alid, well, you would be thrilled, wouldn't you? If it had a signed photo, so much the better. And yet, if he turned up at your door and rang the bell and said, can I come in and chat? Well, that would just blow you away. All the difference in the world between a letter and a visit. You see, in the coming of Jesus, this is exactly what we have. We have God coming in the most incredible way. In a way which is so much more personal, in a way which is so much more significant than all the wonderful ways that he spoke in the Old Testament. Do you remember how Hebrews begins? Long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our forefathers by the prophets. But now in these last days, he's spoken to us by his Son. Now, Emmanuel has come. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. That where God spoke in the Old Testament through the prophets, now he has come to us himself. And in that unique moment in history, described so simply there in that reading from Matthew, did you pick that up? That it's just those few verses, 8 verses, to describe the birth of a baby who is God. And yet in those verses, in that unique moment in history, what we're being told is that God is with us in the fullest sense. See, not only in the person of Jesus, the divine and the human drawn together. You know how we speak about Jesus. He's two natures in one person. He is fully divine. He's fully human. And he is both of those things in one person. So in himself, he is God and human together. We just looked at Jacob, didn't we? The life of Jacob. And one of the stories we looked at was Jacob's ladder, that dream where he saw the ladder up to heaven. Then we saw how Jesus says in the New Testament, that is him, that he himself is that ladder, that he is the link between earth and heaven. And here you see it in the person of Emmanuel, in the person of Jesus, that link. God has come to man, and yet, in an even greater way, by his presence on earth, Jesus is Emmanuel with us all. Jesus is God with us all. He walks our road. He walks in our shoes. He's living alongside us, rubbing shoulders with us. And this is all the more amazing when we remember the sort of people that we are. That he came to a rebellious world, to a sinful world. that he came to the squalor of a borrowed stable, that he left the glory and the comfort of first class to slum it with people who didn't deserve it. Well, Jesus is Emmanuel because he's with us. But it follows from this, and this is really important that we get hold of, that Jesus is always Emmanuel. Jesus is always Emmanuel. We sometimes say, don't we, to people, oh, you've just missed so-and-so. I was just talking to them, you've just missed them. Too late. What do we feel like that with Jesus? That yes, if we'd been a shepherd there on the hills of Bethlehem on that glorious night, if we'd seen the angels, if we'd hurried to the stable, if we'd seen the baby, oh, well, that would have been an incredible privilege to meet God. Even if we'd been living in Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Israel, even anywhere in the Roman Empire at that time, well, then that would have been great. But have we missed the boat? Jesus was all those years ago. What about now? Well, Matthew, writing his gospel, doesn't want us to think that way. You may be aware of this, that Matthew bookends the gospel with two brilliant Emmanuel bookends, God with us bookends, at the start and at the end. So he starts here